Because I'm a teacher, I usually encourage my students to sit closer. Otherwise, it becomes a lecture, not a class. I'm going as close as I can, and no one's moving up. All right. I just found out that my talk is till 1:10. I thought it was for a full hour, so listen quickly. I don't know how you do that. I'm going to skip all the jokes I had for the beginning and just get straight to the... Every talk on child rearing I've ever attended, and there aren't many of them, always stress how important it is to love your children, which personally I think is rather duh. But no one stresses the equally obvious that if children have good manners and those who know how to interact with other people, who know how to receive favors graciously, those who say thank you, don't leave a mess, make themselves all that more lovable. I'd say it's sharper. People who don't teach their children to have manners, I think that's a form of parental abuse. I'm not here to give a talk on child rearing. You'll see that's not. I'm here to talk about ourselves. And I've threatened I'm going to teach you also, I'm going to try and explain how we can inculcate this in ourselves. That's my weak spot, but let's work on that. Any yeshiva-educated person will tell you the most important thing in the world is Torah. So much so that I'm a docent in Yad Vashem. I'm a senior docent in Yad Vashem. And I begin my tour. My tour is unusual because Yad Vashem was created to be guided. And at any time, there are dozens of tours within Yad Vashem. And these tour guides are unspooling data that I don't think the head can basically access. It's just so much information. So what's unique about my tour is I'm always telling stories. What's the most famous story of the Holocaust? Not a hard question. The most famous story. Anne Frank? Yeah. Right, don't get swell-headed over that. Correct. Anne Frank. Now, Anne's story is not a reflective story. She wasn't in the ghettos, wasn't in the camps. She had a roof over her head, a modicum of food with her family. But because it's a story, it's easier to relate. So what I do, what's unique about my tour, is I'm always telling stories so we can better connect to the evil. But what I do is we come into the museum itself, which sometimes I call Safdie's tomb. And it's this isosceles triangle, drab, gray. And I said, what do we have here? And most people notice gray, drab. I'm trying to point out that there's carpet, which they don't pick up on, because once we step into the Holocaust, we lose the carpet. So they say, what do we have here? So many, let's call them Beis Yaakov girls, always say we have Torah. I wasn't asking about that. What do we have here? So Torah is the most important thing. It's like a knee jerk. But before Torah, it says, a fabulous chazal, derech eretz kadma Torah. In other words, God could somehow conceive a world without Torah, but he could not conceive a world without menschlichkeit, without derech eretz, without civility. That's how important it is. It's so important, it's more important than the most important thing. I hope I get this right. The Pope landed in JFK, and they had this really fancy Delancey limousine to take him to where he was going. And he got out, and he said to the driver, you know, I have to, but my one Yetzirah is I love to drive. Do you mind if I drive the limousine? He said, okay. So the drive, and he's speeding down the BQE, and a cop pulls him over, and then the cop gets on the phone and says, listen here. You're not going to believe this. You're really not going to believe this. We have this super VIP on the highway. What do you mean? Super, super. Who is it? I don't know. Super, super. What do you mean? Super, super. Who is it? I don't know. But the Pope's his driver. So before Torah itself comes derech eretz. I mean, that should be a strong enough incentive. Then, the other thing is that we have to be very concerned about our neighbors. Because the people who are going to impact the most upon us are our neighbors. You cannot be influenced by those you're in contact with. I find it strange. I teach in seminary. I'm 27, so I have some of my students here. People call me up around February time, and they ask me, which school should we send our daughter to? So I tell them, I think what you're doing is you should, you know, this is a very monumental decision. The year of seminary, the same thing, that gap year of yeshiva, is by far the most important year of your lives. Infinitely more important than the year of 21 to 22 and 33 to 34. For no one year is going to govern more the woman you'll become, the man you'll marry, the family you'll raise. And people make a decision which school based on tertiary considerations like, where are my friends going? That's not a significant enough decision. So where should you send your daughter? And the answer is, I think you should be looking at the graduates. Don't look at, you know, what they're promising you if they serve you warm meals and what they do for Shabbat, but who are the graduates? Likewise, when people looking, when they have young kids, they go to the pre-1A, look at the graduates. So that the influence that's going to be on children, on individuals, on ourselves, is very much by our environment. I was speaking at a Pesach program, and there's a fellow, we'll call him David, because that's his name, and he is a man who really made it in Hollywood. Really made it. I'm not keeping, because of the story, I'm not going to tell you who he is, but he made it. And so there was a Q&A, and they asked him, what can you say about the Hollywood environment? And he said, now I want you to know, I'm in America now because I'm shooting a film for an event that I'm making. And when you're involved in a film, you can be involved with people who are cinematograph experts and grips and sound people and directors and production assistants that are very brilliant. But that doesn't mean they have stellar language or stellar character. So he described that he was on a set, and everything's always a rush because it's so costly to film. You want to try and get in everything in one day before you go into the editing. And it's hectic and it's harrowing. And he described that after coming home, after 3 days finishing a wrap on a scene, he came home, and his infirm wife asked him if she could get something, and she said, what am I, your effing slave? And everybody gasped. Because when you're in an environment, it has an impact upon you. And you have to be very naive to believe that people are not influenced by their environment. Or you can be not only not influenced, but it won't make a difference in how you conduct yourself. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz said that midos, character, is like fire. If you accidentally put your hand into the fire, it will singe your hand, even though you did not intend to. The impact of something, it doesn't matter your intent, the consequence is there. Bad character will influence people from good homes. That's a fact. Where do kids learn destructive behavior, drugs, selling drugs? It's not from the Shabbos table. It's the influence that's around us. Right? The Sefer Chinuch says very famously, a person is influenced by their environment. This can work for the good and it can work for the bad, but it works much better for the bad. More kids are influenced to take drugs by their friends than those are influenced to get off drugs by their friends. I want to give you one more example, even though this is not my subject. I just want to be true to the fact of how do we teach this, inculcate this. It's extremely politically incorrect example. It's very incorrect, even though nowadays people forgot about this already. But my example is that Barack Obama withdrew his membership in Jeremiah Wright's church 5 months before the election. Now, Pastor Wright married the Obamas, he baptized their kids, and he spoke to them for 20 years. And how do you think a person who has such an influence on you all of a sudden, and this is a man who was given the Louis Farrakhan Award for Life of Achievement of anti-Semitism, racism, and I could go on and on. It's just unbelievable. He's got a rap sheet from here to tomorrow. So how could it be that you can hear your religious leader speak for 20 years and it's not going to make an impact? One more example. There is no prohibition against being a criminal defense attorney. There's nothing wrong with that, except for the fact you're going to spend a lot of time with people who think the Ten Commandments don't apply to themselves. Okay, enough. Let's get back to the character. Okay, so being an honorable mensch, as I like to call it, a person who's well-behaved, means more than just saying please and thank you. It means not leaving a soiled tissue on the bench or on the floor or on the desk. It means treating people as if they matter. You can argue. You can even argue with your spouse as long as you're fair. Fair means you stay on the subject. The two words you always want to avoid are always and never. When you get in an argument, and you always do this, and you dredge up everything. That's not fair. Stay on the point, that's fair. Treat people as if they matter. You call people up and you say, how are you? But you don't listen for the answer. I'll tell you two true stories which happened to me. How was your trip? I broke my leg. Oh, good. How was your summer? My mother died. Good. No one's listening. And a few practical applications. Firstly, if I could create a new term, it would be cell phone decorum. There are times that it's just inappropriate to speak on the phone or smartphone. I've been to funerals where a cell phone goes off. Did you ever notice that at a funeral, it's always the jumpiest niggin? It's always the Munsters or the Adams family. But, okay, I'm aware of the fact that sometimes you forget to turn off your phone. But how do people take the call? I was at a funeral in Yerushalayim, it was two summers ago, a very tragic situation, and the guy next to me is getting one call after another call, and it wasn't on silent. Well, and he's talking about food. And after five phone calls, finally my mental daggers pierced him, so he moved over a little bit, and he's still talking. And I said to the guy next to me, I can't believe this. He said to me, Chanoch, I can't believe you can't believe this. But I don't believe it's inappropriate. And what I also don't get, if the phone goes off, and I discussed this, by the way, at the Shabbos table, I said, I was at a funeral, and someone got a phone call, and my kid said right away, it must have been a doctor. I said, I don't think this 15-year-old girl is a doctor. The other thing is that if the phone goes off, this should be a message from the rooftops, turn off your phone. Nachering, 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 another, and turn off your phone. It's unbelievable. We're waiting for a phone now to ring to prove the point. Okay. People also talk on the phone. You know, Providence places you in a crowded place, a crowded bus or a crowded restaurant. People talk so loudly. Why do I have to hear all the gory details of your new diet? How cute your niece is, what you're making for supper. So loud. I've heard people shout intimate things over the phone. It's unbelievable. Okay. We're going to skip a little bit. Not that you would know. Courtesy means offering your seat on public transportation to one who's older or weak. Or weaker. And meaning on a bus or a train. I once offered my seat on a bus to a woman that I thought was pregnant. And when she told me she wasn't, I was so embarrassed. I said, I'm getting off anyways. So I had to pay double car fare. And we're talking about bus or train. I want to add also, the same thing would apply to a taxi, where taxis, at least in Manhattan, are at a premium. Offer a taxi to one who's older or weaker. And I'm in the latter category of weaker, because I'm always schlepping my books, which makes me not so mobile. So a story which happened to me is a true story. I hailed a cab in New York. Hey, taxi. Got a ring to it. Hey, taxi. And you know, when you hail a cab, it can't just stop right there. It has to weave itself to the side of the road. So when the cab pulled to the side, I hoisted up the box of books. I ran to the cab, and a lady got in. I said, hey, that's my taxi. And she said, that's life. That's what I'm trying to encourage you not to do, just in case people think it's a me-first society. That is inappropriate. We're talking about cars. Another thing is, I don't know why this is, but it is. Driving brings out the worst character in people. Someone cuts you on the highway, you unspool all these invectives, all these expletives in front of children. Now, the person who cut you may not be a righteous, pious saint, but they're not your enemy. And this week I looked up, and I already forgot, but I looked up the statistics of road rage, and I don't remember, but over 100,000 people a year in America are maimed for life, consequential to road rage. It's not that important. My Talmidim told me in yeshiva that if someone cuts you on the highway, you'll cut nine other people to cut them back. That's intelligent at 90 miles an hour. Okay, skip a little more. Okay, consideration also means not to be late, to respect other people's time. Everyone knows, everyone knows. If I put my hand into your pocket, I'm a thief. There is much less awareness that if I waste your time, that's also stealing, but it's far more heinous. Money can be replaced. Time is irreplaceable. If you make a whole class wait for you, or a whole group wait for you, that's a very serious crime, complicated, compounded by all those people that are present. A person in my family who's very late all the time, and I always kibitz her, then on her tombstone they're going to write, here lies the late. And I want to tell you two stories in this regard. The first story is about Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish, for those of you not aware, was the outstanding Gadol Hador, outstanding rabbinic authority of his time 60 years ago. And he was putting together a minyan, we call this a bare-bones minyan, a minyan mitzumtzam. It was just 10 men. And one of the men was hemming and hawing. He said, "What's the matter?" He said, "I'm happy to join your minyan, but if I do, I'll be late for an appointment." Said the Chazon Ish, "Go to the appointment." And he added, "You can't daven on stolen time." And that broke the minyan. More contemporaneously, my Rebbe is called the Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. If someone would give him a ride, we can't imagine him not having a ride, but we're going back in time, he would be extraordinarily grateful. Grateful because it was a savings of time, and time is life. And the more time you have, the more life you have. It'll sound strange, but 50 years ago, it was unusual in Israel for a religious person to drive. 55 years ago, almost unheard of for a religious person to own a car. And the person who told me the story was the first car in Shari Chesed, Shlomo Zalman's neighborhood. And Shlomo Zalman was going to be Masada Kedushin, who's going to officiate at a wedding out of town. The person offered to give him a ride. He said, "What time should I pick up the Rosh Yeshiva?" He said, "The wedding is called for 6. Pick me up at 4:30. Shlomo Zalman was outside 4:30. My experience, Shlomo Zalman, the Bar Lachaim told him his Talmud Muvak, Rabbi Victor Nevensal. Any time you make up to pick them up, at that time, precisely, they're outside with a sefer. Never, ever, ever do you have to wait for them. So he's outside at 4:30, and he's waiting and waiting and waiting. Yeah. 4:30, 4:40, 5 o'clock, 5:10. 5:25, the driver's motorcycle said, "Where were you? I couldn't bear the thought. If I would have come on time, she would have arrived at the wedding as the busboys were setting up the table, as the photographer was taking his equipment out of the case." Said Shlomo Zalman, "Don't worry about me. I have plenty of things to do with my time. But we make up a time, we must keep a time." So if you think, by nature, I'm not a prompt person. I'm allergic to morning. I don't wear good character on my sleeves. I'm here to tell you that we don't have to wait for Rosh Hashanah or for Elul to improve. The most important thing is to become a better person. I'll give you a few examples in a moment, but let me give you four examples of what I mean about this. Four examples that we can change, because that's what life is all about. Firstly, this example I heard from Rabbi Friend. When we were kids, I'm 27, but when we were kids, everybody spoke Lashon Hara. Nowadays, a much greater awareness not to gossip or besmirch or slander. I mean, you might say, this may be Lashon Hara, but you don't come out and say it. That's an improvement. And if the world can change, we can change. I distinctly remember, my next example, I distinctly remember in Yeshiva, second Seder, there was a petrochemical layer, yay thick, malodorous, odorific, farstunken, redolent. Nowadays, if you smoke, you're a pariah outside in the cold or in the heat. You don't smoke in public places anymore. You watch a movie from the 80s on your neighbor's TV. Everybody's smoking. Everyone's smoking. The world has changed. We can change. When I travel to America, I live in Israel. When I stay in Brooklyn, my host, their name is Pashkez. Very sweet people, these Pashkezes. And they manufacture candy. And Pashkez candy, their target audience are Hasidim. If you look at the wrapper of a Pashkez candy bar, there are more Hechsherim than there are ingredients. With no connection, no Shaychus. No Shatnes, no Kimle B'drabim Neim, no Kimle Viburu, no Erev Mefulish, no Erev Chatzelus. No connection. Mr. Pashkez told me, he's a Jew a couple years older than I am, that when he was a kid, if you didn't see a picture of a P.I.G. on a candy bar, you ate it. I remember those days. Didn't go oink, oink. But those days are over. You don't put something in your mouth without checking the ingredients. You don't eat something without checking for Hechsher. The world has changed. My last example, or if you come from England, my last example, is Oskar Schindler was a dishonest businessman, a womanizer, extremely flawed person. And during the Holocaust, he saved nearly 1,200 Jews. And had it not been for the latter, if he'd be remembered, and that's a major if, he'd be remembered as a creep. And now the name Schindler is synonymous with heroism, bravery, courage, self-sacrifice, synonymous. Like Vaseline means petroleum jelly, and Kleenex means tissues, and Q-tips means cotton swabs, Schindler means self-sacrifice. He changed his name. And we can too. And even if we haven't been the mensch that we can be, all of us can change. We can all make that commitment. This reminds me of a story. A Frum woman made a commitment to go on a diet, not tomorrow, but today. And no sooner had she made the commitment to go on a diet, and she was driving down the road past the bakery, and there staring at her from the window was Napoleon oozing custard. No, she said, must be bashert. But then again, I did make this commitment to go on a diet, but then again, God did arrange this fortuitous encounter between the Claire and myself. I know. I'll wait for a sign from above. I know. If I find a parking space in front of the bakery, then I will know it's meant for me to eat the Napoleon. And sure enough, on her 14th time around the block, she found a parking space. Okay, so just to say what I was hinting at before, according to Judaism, being a mensch, it's not merely a virtue, it's a goal of life. Writes the Vilna Gaon, the purpose of life is to strive to break bad habits and improve oneself. Otherwise, what is life for? These are strong words. In other words, if you don't do this, if you don't improve your character, you have failed. You have failed life. That's a biggie. Everyone knows that you can fail a test and not flunk the course, but no one wants to fail life. Everyone knows that if you fall down, that's not a mistake as long as you get back up. A plane which flies from New York to Los Angeles, 85% of the route, it's constantly, dynamically, perpetually being vectored back on course. But the bottom line is it lands in the right airport, in the right runway, in the right city. It's 100% success. Falling down is not a mistake. Staying down is a mistake. The gym where I work out in Yerushalayim is staffed by Russians that are Hebrew challenged. So I was trying to go from the squash court to the pool without getting changed and dressed, and one of them caught me. I didn't want to go outside. Anyway, he caught me and he said to me, "Ata ta'ut," which translates, "You are a mistake." I'm still thinking about this. But the only way to become good people is to do good. I know that doesn't sound like a great bite. It's not to think it, but to do it. In the world to come, they don't want checks. They want receipts. We're going to skip a little more, not that you would know. Let me tell you a story. A story you don't know, I think. Diane Abramsky, is that name familiar to you? That means you don't read enough Teller books, but it's rectifiable. Diane Abramsky was, Greg Gutto was Nifter, I'm not mistaken, 1975 or 1976. He's called Diane Abramsky because when he was banished to Siberia, when he was released, he went to London, became head into the London Beis Din. And he made his job contingent on the fact he had total control of all kashrus in London. And not all the butchers took kindly to this. And one butcher had the gall and the audacity to summon him to court. And I don't mean Beis Din, I call you secular court. You're denying us our democratic process and you're telling us what we have to do. And Diane Abramsky was an extremely forceful individual. He would pound his fist and raise his voice. And they warned him that if you go into court in London and you raise your voice, the judges will flip their wigs, literally and figuratively, because they wear shaitlach in court in England. So when I prepared my book on Diane Abramsky and I read through the court proceedings, they wrote, albeit this court is not accustomed to hear an old tiger roar so loudly, we must unequivocally rule that he is correct. At one point in the court proceedings, the judge asked him, who is the greatest Talmudic authority alive? He said, I am. And the judge said, what about humility? He said, yes, Your Honor, but I'm under oath. So, at one point, Diane Abramsky, now you're talking about a man of incredible intellect. So when he was read a shidduch, the daughter of Rav Shalemsky, the father-in-law-to-be wanted to test him. He said, what can I test you on? He said, test me on the entire Shas, except for a sukkah. I find this an amazing story. Maybe you could fahar me on sukkah, but that's where I would begin and that's where I would end. The entire Shas. For 3 days, he tested him. He couldn't catch him on anything. He said, after 3 days, okay, Mazel Tov, you're engaged. He said, maybe I should meet the girl. Maybe, no. But but I should really see her beforehand. He said, okay, come to the house tonight at 9 o'clock. You'll get engaged. Now, you can imagine what's going on in that household. At 9 o'clock, the guttlador is going to walk through the door. And they're scrubbing and cleaning, and they borrow from neighbors this beautiful embroidered tablecloth, and they put on it stemware and china and crystalware and the petit fours, and it's gewaldig. Everything's wonderful. Then, at 9 o'clock, exactly, there's a knock on the door. Everyone's heart stops beating, and the Kala-to-be's younger brother is walking across the living room floor, and he trips and slips on the long tablecloth, and crash, boom, bam, all the china, silverware, everything comes crashing to the floor. Chatzal Abramsky walks in, and the Kala-to-be goes over to her brother. She lifts him up, and she says, "Are you all right? Are you okay?" And then Abramsky says, "Now you can break a plate. There's nothing to break. It's all broken, but this is what I was looking for. I see this now. I can get engaged." He was looking for the character. Okay. The Gemara says, listen quickly. Gemara says in Brachos, what's a good guest? Nunches. What's a good guest? What's a bad guest? A good guest says, look how much they gave me. Look how much they care for me. How much they're concerned for me. And a bad guest says, and here I'm translating verbatim, they only gave me one cup of wine. And only gave me one slice of meat. And only gave me one wine, meat, and one cup of wine, meat, one piece of bread. And they didn't do it for me. Only trying to impress his wife and children. We don't want to go through life as bad guests. And how do we get this perspective? So my friend Joseph Telushkin, he had a very good insight. You go to someone's house for a simcha, be it a sheva brachos, a l'chaim, whatever the simcha is, and people worked hard to prepare their home for you and all the food. You know, we had a Russian of simchas in our family about 3 years ago, a bunch of simchas, one after another. And I can't believe that I never noticed before. Here I am, 27 years old, and it's for the first time, I don't know what I was thinking, but I'm embarrassed to tell you this. Like, I'm pretending I'm an adult. But whenever I went to Sheva Brachas, and I've been to a million Sheva Brachas, I think, punk, these people, their house is arranged like a birthday party. Table and chairs. Every house in Western civilization has a couch. And now the first thing I do, I notice after all these simchas, nobody had a couch. The first thing I do now when I go to a simcha, I look for the couch. And I find it either on the merpeset or in the hallway on its ear. I think about how much they troubled for me. So you go to someone's house for a simcha, and what happens? As you're driving home, the post-mortem. Salads, atrocious. Home decorating, appalling. Kids, very misbehaved. Shalom bayis. These people worked hard. You should have a good time. For hours, maybe even days. So if you don't have something good to say, then... No, we tried that already. I have a new solution. If you don't have something good to say, wait 24 hours. You can't say it then either, but it'll cool off. But at least have that control. Don't be an ingrate from the rooftops. Wait 24 hours before you badmouth people who work so hard for you. Okay. Now, this idea of being guests, I feel that it's very, very... people don't realize we're guests many times, and we don't act like guests. I'll give you just one. I could give you many examples. I'll give you one. We go to a wedding. We're a guest. And people, you know, machs chemish, like they own the place. Chosen kala go into the cheder yichud, shtel zechaveka mayriv. What does every mayriv in the world always spawn? A breakaway minion. Then a breakaway. Where's the second breakaway minion? Always in front of the ladies' room. So now the ladies are stuck for 10 minutes. They can't get out. And that man has to break another breakaway. That's always in front of the elevator bank. So I thought to myself, can you imagine? You're coming from a long trip, a business day. You want to go back to your room, and you can't get to the elevators because there's 15 Muslims going up and down on the carpets. What would you be thinking? People go outside at a chasna to make a phone call or take a smoke. And they walk outside with their ice cream or with their drink. And when they're finished, they just deposit the china outside. Someone has to pay for it. It's not about simcha the caterer, but you're going to pay for it one day because it increased the costs. Or, you know, they hand out the ice cream and then they call out, I don't want to identify, schmancy bus. So then people get onto the bus with the ice cream. And at the end of the ride, you have 30 spoons and all these things. Like, you're a guest. And it behooves a guest to act appropriately. You don't walk home from someone's house with china in your pocket. There's a story in Yerushalayim that there is a simcha in Yerushalayim, and all of a sudden all the kugel was gone. They didn't know what to do. You can't make a kiddush in Yerushalayim without kugel. So the Baal Simcha gets up on the table and he says, I'm sorry to tell you, but the Erev is down. So all of a sudden everybody's emptying out their pockets. Okay. All right, a little decorum in how we visit the sick. When you go to visit someone that's sick, be it at someone's house or in the hospital, I think the first thing you should do is knock on the door. And if the door isn't there, then knock on the bed. Because people are so, their privacy is so invaded by social workers and phlebotomists and janitorial staff and doctors, it's empowering to feel a sense of privacy. So that you come in, and when you visit the person, it's appropriate to sit down. You know, you stand up like this, and you're not on the same plane. Sit down, show that you're happy to visit them. Everyone knows that it's not courteous to look at your watch. So what do people do? Oh, natural. Inappropriate. Sometimes you just can't visit someone because they're too far away. They're in London, they're in Shalayim, they're in Cincinnati. So can you call up? I think the first question, just the quorum is this a good time to call? Bearing in mind there's other people who made the trouble to go visit. And if it's not a good time, then when can I call back? Also, Beis Ovel, Shalone Da, it's very awkward. So people call up, you can have 15 Rosh Hashivas there, and you're speaking to them, and the person's on the phone, and they're talking, and they start telling you Divrei Torah, and they're in a Chama. If it's not a good, is it a good time to call? If it's not, find a different time. Okay. I have to end already. Let me just, otherwise, that certainly wouldn't be preferred. Let me just tell you, there were two famous orators, a Greek and a Roman, Demosthenes and Cicero. When Demosthenes finished, they said, great speech. When Cicero finished, they said, let's march. So ladies and gentlemen, we know we want to be a mensch, we want our children to be a mensch, we want to encourage ourselves to conduct ourselves like mensch. Let's march. Even though I ended, it's very rabbinic to end several times. Rachel Salanter said, you can speak Musser, moral sensitivity, for 35 minutes, and it's all worthwhile, even if one person listens, even if the one person is the speaker. Thank you.
I wrote the first story, yes.
Yes, because I read your story before I wrote mine.
Okay.
Rabbi Talbot, I haven't seen you in many years. I actually went to the seminary in the beginning.
One second, Susie, don't go away, okay?
Many, many years ago, I helped your wife on Thursday. My name is Rabbi Talbot. Because I am, it doesn't exist anymore. Somebody has been like, wow, I can't believe that. This is a long time ago.
Oh, right. You listened a while ago.
Yeah, sure.